we've got a quorum anyway, so Dr. Passion can join us when he gets here. First on our agenda is recognition of years of service for Dr. Dvorak for her 3 years, 4 years, three?
Four.
4 years of service on the Board of Health, and she has reluctantly decided not to re-up. So I suppose we're going to have to come down and take a picture.
Oh. You knew I should have come today.
You should, yeah. So I'll open this, and then I'll save the box for you. As long as I don't drop it.
Oh my gosh, that's really cool. Thank
there you
go.
I'll pass that down to her. And
that's really neat.
Oh, do I?
He made it.
just
in time.
Everybody face Margaret.
That's a little better. No, wait. Okay. Oh, wait. Oh, too close.
Yeah, that's why I don't
do it. Did it go?
I heard a click.
There's no flash.
I had no flash,
though. So. Yeah, let me just see. I get it. Oh, my God.
You need again?
I just want to video. I know. That's way too much of you guys.
Yeah.
I agree.
Way too much.
What do they call it, a smartphone?
Ooh.
Oh, the chalk one there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Oh, I got to get the reward in there. Oh, you're too tall.
What?
There you go. That's better. The flush building offer is automatic.
It must not need it.
It's your shiny. Oh,
thank
face.
You very much.
Yeah, thank service. You. That was really nice.
Okay, and then along those lines, I think we have a couple of applicants maybe for our new position. So if the two applicants want to join us here at the table where the mics are and introduce yourselves. This is kind of new for us because typically we have to twist arms to get somebody to serve.
Yeah, really?
On the Board of Health, we've never had more applicants than we've needed. And just so everybody's aware, we also have a current board member whose term is up, Mark Speck. He's out on the injured reserve list, but he has indicated he has an intention to reapply.
Okay.
For the board, and the board has made note in the past that they do like to have somebody with a that type of a background, plumbing and
yep.
septic background, water background. So, and also Dr. George Belitzos, former CEO of Youth and Shelter Services, sent in an application, and he regrets that he couldn't be here today. He's at a seminar in Des Moines, but his application is also on file. So. I'll turn it over to you two if you want to just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you have an interest in the Board of Health.
All right. Hi, I'm Dr. Kristen Obink. I'm a 2011 graduate of the Iowa State College of Vet Med and then went on to complete my Master's of Public Health degree at the University of Minnesota in 2012. I spent about 2.5 years with the Iowa Department of Public Health and the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals as the coordinator for the Food and Feed Rapid Response Team, and then also served as the foodborne illness epidemiologist for foodborne outbreaks and disease surveillance and those types of things. I live in Ames with my husband and many furry friends, no two-legged children yet, but avid Cyclone fan. I spent some time in small animal clinical practice during my full-time job at the state, and then recently, about a month and a half ago, joined the Center for Food Security and Public Health at Iowa State. Over there, I'm helping with the secure food supply plans and then also serve to help with the national veterinary accreditation modules where veterinarians can become accredited to fill out health certificates and other accredited responsibilities. So That's a little bit about myself. My interest in the position, I am very interested in serving my community and thought that this would truly be an opportunity for me to do that on a little broader scale. I enjoyed interacting with all of the different backgrounds of people that I worked with when I was at the State Health Department. I think this would give me an opportunity to do that again. And I truly enjoyed doing that and think that I could bring a kind of a unique background to the board. So.
Very good. Go ahead.
My name is Megan Myers, and I currently work at Story County Medical Center. I'm the director of food and nutrition there. So my interest is food and nutrition. I have a master's in healthcare administration, and currently with being the director of food and nutrition, I think it would be good to get Story County Hospital involved a little bit and represent them at some of these meetings. I think that would be beneficial to the board. And then also I'm currently work with United Way to get the backpack program into the two schools in Story County that currently do not have that backpack program, which would be Colonesco and Collins Maxwell. So that's another food outreach that we're currently doing. I am interested in the position to serve Story County more and to represent Story County Medical Center. I am also an applicant for the fellowship of the American College of Healthcare Executives. So this is also something that I would like to do to benefit that endeavor.
Very good. Either one of you have any questions for the board? Just briefly, Story County does not have a public health department other than we contract with, is it Mary Greeley Home Health? It used to be Homeward, but Mary Greeley now contracts. Well, yeah, right there he is, our director. But yes, we've had an arrangement, I think, since 1980. Four with Mary Greeley and through Homeward to do our public health piece of the Board of Health's work. Margaret James is our environmental health director, and she's officed here in Story County. And so we're different than a lot of boards of health that have their own. County has their own public health department. But we meet every other month at 2 o'clock, so it's the first Tuesday of the month. Every other month, so we'll have a calendar that's available. So I think, and the way this works is the Board of Supervisors actually makes the appointment, and so what we've asked this board to do is give some consideration, and what I'll ask is give some consideration to the applicants. They've all been emailed a copy of all the applicants, and what I'm going to ask them to do is take a look at those applicants, email me with any thoughts and recommendations they want to make, and then also give me the authority to make that recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, because that's the other hat that I wear. I sit on the Board of Supervisors here in Story County. So we make all the appointments to the boards and commissions on the first business day of the year. By Iowa code, the board has to meet on the first business day of the year and make all our appointments. So we'll... we'll give it some consideration, and I'll make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. Does anybody here have any questions for either one of the two that they want to ask, or because this is your opportunity?
No, not right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So we should get your recommendations or our recommendations to you within next week. Probably.
No, we don't have to. We won't make that recommendation, or the board won't make the appointment until the first. It's actually the 4th of January is when we meet.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, yeah.
So, I would ask you by the last week of December to give this a little thought.
Better have me do it right
away. Or as soon as you possibly can.
Give me a bit.
So, but that's the way the process will work. And once we make our determination, I'll email the candidate. I'll email all the candidates and let them know what the verdict is. So.
But thank you very much for
thank
applying.
You. Thanks for taking, like I said,
really,
this is something new for us because typically we don't have an excess of applicants. So I think Glenn's arm might still hurt just a little bit from being
here.
Yes.
So. Are we filling just my position? Or are we filling
well,
two?
Technically we'll have to fill Mark's too. So, but he has
we
to turn.
Two
we have two positions open.
Okay. All right.
But Mark wants to reapply.
Yeah.
considering he gets his application in by the 15th, or he may be out of luck. So, and it's a 3-year term. Is that correct? Yeah, 3-year term. So, if you want to stay for the rest of the meeting, feel free, but certainly don't feel that you're obligated. So, very good. Our next item on the agenda is a public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. I don't see a rush for the microphone. We'll move on to the consent agenda. If you want to take a look at those, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Is there anything further? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Consent agenda is approved. Additional items. Discussion. Is your man here today?
No.
Okay.
He
decided he's not going to come. Okay, so we can scratch him off permanently. Consideration to appoint Paul Tude as the advisor of the Board of Supervisors for the selection of the new Board of Health members for the term starting in 2016. So kind of like what I said earlier, if you guys would like to instill that authority with me, I can take thoughts from you guys individually over email, and then I will put those together and make a determination on who. And I'll just, like I say, I'll make that recommendation to the board, and if it's approved, they'll approve it with everybody else. Typically, there's no separate discussion on individual board members or commission members unless one of the board members wants to pull one for discussion. But so, if that's agreeable to you guys, I would take a motion to approve that.
So moved.
I'd like to second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed, the same sign. Okay. Consideration of the FY17 budget, environmental health. Margaret, I guess that's you. Margaret's always the first one that gets to talk about her budget. Because we meet in December and we don't meet again until February.
That's right. You get a sneak preview.
And then typically the rest of the county offices start their process in the second week of January.
Yeah. So I handed out on the tables of the expenses and revenues for fiscal year 2017. And that's July 1 is our fiscal year. Very unremarkable budget this year. Nothing fancy, nothing new. The salaries are a little different. And the Board of Supervisors have told me numerous times that my staff, who is not going to be represented by union, will be treated the same as those folks now slipping over to the union.
Right.
Okay.
So, just to clarify for the board, we've had a vote from the employees in this building and with the conservation employees to be represented, to form a bargaining unit, to be represented by a labor union. There were certain groups that were not included in that. The conservation is, those employees are actually employees of the conservation board, so they form their own unit. The Board of Health, Matt and Kathy are employees, and Margaret are employees of this board. Had those two employees decided they wanted to form their own unit, that's what they would have had to have done. They would have had to petition to form their own two-person unit. But then the rest of the employees, with a few exceptions in this building, will be represented. So, So now we're just down to a handful of employees that are not represented by a bargaining unit in the county. So
I'm hoping that those salaries will go up some for those two.
And I know I've said this several times, but I'm going to say it again, that we will get them on a merit.
Yes.
Now that the rest of it's been taken out of our hands.
What union is it?
It's PPME, Public Professional and Maintenance Employees. It's the same one that represents the Sheriff's Office, the Road Department. They represent Ames Police Department. They'll actually only represent employees whose salary comes off the tax rolls.
Okay.
So they're all school districts, county, and city employees.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And we've had the sheriff's office has had them represent that office for the last, I don't know, 25 years, 26 years. So.
So the only big difference on that budget then is a large increase on health insurance for everyone and a large decrease on flex benefits. Otherwise, it's pretty much a static budget from last year.
Okay.
And your car is okay?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to put up a little safety net to catch the shovels before they decapitate us. That's.
Well, you talked about that.
Yeah.
About
what?
Buying a.
We had to go to safety training. They talked about, you know, how your dog or your purse or your sack of groceries can be just, you know, these flying objects. And I'm thinking, we've got all this equipment in the back of the. Of a truck, of a SUV, yeah. And so Matt has a leftover safety net that will get installed. He had it from his truck. So, yeah, that's on the it's on the front burner.
Okay.
We'd have bought you a new one. Okay.
Donated, yeah.
I think I talked to Cal right after that, and I mean, he's got resources where he can order one.
Okay.
But,
and will they put it in for us?
I don't know if they will, but we can find somebody at the body shop and can put them in for you.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the car is fine to answer that. It's about 100,000 miles on it and might need new shocks next year.
Who does the maintenance for that? You just bring it in someplace? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like the DLT.
I don't.
Okay.
All right. And it... It's an 07?
07.
You think, maybe? Is that right?
It's written in
it's an
that.
07.
It's a 7,
okay.
I believe.
All right. So maybe next budget time we can have a discussion about it.
Maybe, yeah.
So.
The body's in great shape. And
do you ever get the airbag replaced?
No, the parts aren't in yet.
Parts aren't in yet?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if anybody has any questions for Margaret on the budget, this would be the time. You're right. It's about the same as it was last year.
Okay. Let's go.
Yep.
Okay.
All of the Hickory Grove grant thing is gone, so it's a lot simpler budget this year.
Okay. All right. So if there's no questions, I would take a motion to approve the budget.
Motion to approve the budget.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Is there anything further? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Okay. Consideration for policy to require residential connections to municipal sewers within 200 feet.
I forgot that was on the agenda. I've mentioned my involvement with the Slater Source Water Protection group that we've been doing. So it's coming to an end. We're about finished. And one of those things that we did was we looked at septic systems that are within the source water protection rings, and it's by travel year. So that inner ring, it would be 2 years for water to travel from there to the city wells, okay? So one thing that we did is we sent out letters and maintenance brochures to all the septic owners within that 10-year focus, the outer ring. And then, in doing this, we realized that there's one unpermitted system that is within 200 feet of a municipal sewer line, and then it's really close. It's less than 500 feet from an active city well. So if you were to drill a well nowadays, you couldn't put it that close to a septic system. But that being said, this is not a permitted system. I think it's a mystery system that probably hooks to a drain tile. Okay. I'm very uncomfortable having that there so close to the city wells. Now, in the past, my predecessor did not enforce that 200-foot sewer hookup requirement. There is a sentence in that state regulation that says it's up to the local authority if you want to enforce that or if it's economically not feasible. In this case, I think we should enforce that requirement and make him hook up to city sewer. It's probably going to be fairly expensive because there will be a pump involved. So, I don't know, $10,000, maybe something like that. But I guess the question I have for the board or the guidance that I need is should we enforce this across the board for all the towns and, you know, for those outliers that can hook up to city sewer that are within 200 feet, should we be enforcing that now, or is that a little bit too aggressive for your liking?
Any idea how many we're talking about?
I have no idea. Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, it'll take a little bit of sitting down and going through maps and
files
and that, yeah. So that would be what we would do this winter. And maybe that's what we could do is come up with some numbers for you. I know that Maxwell has a few. And it really does seem like the cities don't want to do this. You know, you tell them, and it's like, oh, well, you know, he doesn't have any money, and, oh, we've thought about that, but, you know, we're not going to push it. Same with Slater. They really didn't seem interested in making this individual hook up to city sewer, which for him, I really think it's necessary. And, you know, if we don't do it across the board for all the towns, we could just link this enforcement. Instead of them thinking that we're targeting an individual, we could say that it's linked to the Slater source water protection thing. And then every time a source water protection study starts on a municipality, the same rules would apply.
Is that something that's done on a regular basis, or?
The DNR and the Rural Water Association is slowly helping towns do this. And I think maybe three towns are done in Story County. I can't get a real clear answer from DNR on that, but I'll look into that as well.
Okay.
Would this, you know, first of all, if you're going to enforce it for this person, Slater, you got to do it across the board.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any way out of that.
Okay.
How long will this person have to do it? 6 months, a year, 3 years?
In this instance, I would like to see next construction season, so like give them a June 1st deadline. However, financially, that might not be doable. They do have the state revolving fund where they get a low interest loan, and they would qualify. You know, everybody qualifies for the most part for these.
So there is some funding available.
Yeah, well, not funding, just low interest loans. Yeah, no grant money. And it, you know, I've already talked to this guy, and he's not interested in doing this.
No surprise.
But, yeah.
But so the regulation is already on the books.
It's a state, yep, Chapter 69.
So, but what we have to decide is whether or not, and we have the option of enforcing it or not.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it's a case where, well, they've got a perfectly functioning system, and then all of a sudden the city puts a line through. South Ames is a good example of that. You know, and the guy just spent $16,000 putting a mound in, and then boom, the line goes through. So,
I might be a little more interested if there's some language in there that if they've got a functioning system, you know, if it needs replaced or repaired, then they have to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what Nevada did with the individual that lives just west of town here. And there's a couple of individuals just west of town, and the city annexed that, and they gave the two residents that were currently on septic, they gave them, well, there's a condition in there that as long as their system is operating properly, they don't have to hook on to city sewer. But when the system fails and it's in need of repair or replacement, then at that point
they would have to.
So if somebody has a functioning system,
then they should be okay until they have.
See, that's what happens in Ames. If you do any remodeling, you have to bury your lines. But if you're not doing remodeling, they let your lines be above the ground.
Right.
So it's...
So when you do that, yeah.
Well, we could do that.
Yeah.
That might be a reasonable way to do it.
And some of these properties, it's 200 feet, the way DNR interprets it, is 200 feet to the building, not to the property line. So if you've got a huge lot, you wouldn't necessarily have to hook up, you know, if you're...
Right.
But I would be, I guess, you know, that would be a good, a way easier start than forcing it down on everybody.
Yeah, especially because this individual doesn't have a permitted system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's possible that there's a system there that we just don't know about. The likelihood of that is probably pretty slim, but
yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to propose is if there's a functioning system that they don't have to hook up.
Functioning permitted.
Permitted system that they don't have to hook up, but if the system ever requires repair and stops functioning.
Yeah.
Then they need to hook up.
Okay.
And I would feel...
Major repair. Because sometimes, you know, just...
Yeah, I mean, if you just...
A box or something
right.
like that.
I would feel more comfortable if we worked with the county attorney's office on the language.
Okay.
To get that squared.
Okay.
And then if you could do a little research and see how many other counties, what other counties do that are of like, you know, like size to what we are, you know, what where they're at with this, and then... And then you're going to work on to see how many numbers we're talking about.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. All right. So we can continue this till February.
Should I let this gentleman know now or wait till?
Well, you can let him know that we're going to do a little more research on it, and there's every possibility that he's going to be required to.
Okay.
To hook up. I mean.
Maybe I'll wait till after Christmas.
Okay. But yeah, we can wait on this. Yeah, we'll just continue this until our February meeting. Next is agency and departmental reports. Iowa Department of Public Health update. Heather Bombi. Hello, Heather. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good. That's just the first thing. I'm
not going to be
here.
All right.
All right. So I'm Heather Bombi with the Iowa Department of Public Health. I'm the regional community consultant for Region 1, which is 16 counties in central Iowa. So my job is I'm the liaison between the public health department and our local public health agencies and our local boards of health. So today, I just kind of wanted to give a little update on some things. The first thing that I gave Paul, as you'll recall, the local public health services contract that every local board of health receives from the department every year, for Story County, it's around $120,000, I think, ish. That amount. So every 3 years we perform a compliance review on behalf of the Board of Health just to make sure that everything is in place that they need to meet Iowa Code Chapter 80. So we did that first part of November, and Mary Greeley Home Health Services actually had a perfect compliance review. They didn't have anything that they needed to correct at all. So, Paul, you'll be getting in snail mail a copy of that, but I just thought I would bring that today and share with the board. So, on behalf of the department, I just want to thank your agency for a terrific review, and they've done a fabulous job keeping all of their records and following Chapter 80 and sometimes it's difficult when they use the sliding fee scale based on income. So there's a lot of things that they need to keep up on in terms of charting and things like that. So they did a great job. So that's the first item I wanted to talk about. Any questions about the compliance review? Okay. Second thing that I wanted to discuss briefly is Medicaid modernization. And probably everybody...
Heard anything about that at all?
...is sick of hearing about that, but I just wanted to provide you with the most recent letter from the Department of Human Services, and please bear in mind that it's the Department of Human Services that's coordinating this. It's not the Department of Health. I have no power, and don't shoot the messenger as I move forward. But so this is the latest correspondence that came out from the department, and just to kind of, in case everybody isn't on track with Medicaid modernization, so back in early summer, late spring, it was decided that instead of Iowa Medicaid Enterprise coordinating all of the Title 19 or Medicaid services in Iowa, that it was going to be opened up to an RFP in August. That was awarded to four different managed care organizations, and those four are listed on the back of that handout that you received. And obviously in the news this week, there's been talk that maybe one of those companies may not be participating. So there's all of those changes going along with that. It's going to impact about a half a million Iowans receiving Medicaid services, but along with those Iowans that are impacted with their Medicaid, it's also our providers that are impacted. And I know at one point the Iowa Hospital Association was encouraging the hospitals not to sign contracts with the four. I don't know if that's still the case, but that was out there. So there's a lot of concern with the implementation in terms of providers and the contracts that those providers have to sign, and then in terms of the members, the Medicaid members, who have begun receiving their mailings, but they have to choose who they want for providers, and it's just a very confusing time for a lot of people. So this correspondence that they sent out last week, I thought was good. It has a link to all of the resources that are out there. If you just Google Medicaid modernization, it'll take you right to DHS's website, and they'll have all the latest information. In terms of local public health agencies and local boards of health, we've just been trying to go out and talk to our agencies and our boards of health about those local public health agencies. Their role in all of this has really been an educational role. The members sometimes have a lot, a close relationship with staff at local public health agencies, and those are the folks that they're going to go to with questions about, why am I getting this in the mail, what does this mean to me, and what do I have to do? So we've been trying to keep those local agencies informed as much as we can, and probably bombarding them with a lot of information that I don't know if they want it, but they're getting it, and they're passing that along to Medicaid members. So that's kind of an update on that. Any questions? All right.
I'm good.
The third thing, and I'm not sure if Kyle or Margaret had already sent this out, but this is just an updated, if you want to hand this to them, fluoridation tool that talks about the different communities in Iowa that are discontinuing or reducing their water fluoridation. And so I just highlighted on the front there that it's in Story County. We've got the communities of Gilbert and Maxwell that are looking at that. And then on the back, the department has recently hired a, what is she called? She is water fluoridation coordinator with our Bureau of Oral Health Services. So if you have specific questions about water fluoridation, I'd encourage you to contact Kelsey Feller. She is the expert. Dr. Bob Russell is the bureau chief there, and he, I think, has been overwhelmed with fluoridation questions and issues and concerns in the last several years. So it's a good addition to have that position within the department. So just an FYI that that this is the most recent.
So our families in Gilbert and Maxwell no longer have fluoride in their water? Is that correct?
I'm not sure if they are just considering. Oh, no.
No, they said they're
no longer adding.
Mm-hmm.
So do we know how much fluoride is in their water naturally? Because there's a lot of natural fluorination in Iowa.
I would contact Kelsey and find out if she has those. You probably don't have any.
It was, we didn't have much.
You didn't?
We didn't have that much. It was just back when I worked for the city, we had to have a minimum. We had to add just a little bit to make that minimum.
So they have some fluoride, but just not, they probably just won't have the 0.7.
Right.
But that information is available someplace, right?
It is. Okay. I think that
the
water
has that.
Yeah. I have found that with the private wells, it's all over the map.
Right.
It's not a consistent number, so they would, you would have to just go to the micro system.
Okay.
Okay.
Questions about that? All right. Last thing that I wanted to talk to you about was just an update on public health structure changes in a couple counties in Iowa. So Paul had mentioned to the new applicants about the structure here in Story County with the subcontract between the Board of Health and with Mary Greeley Home Health. In two of the counties in my region, this summer, Skiff Medical Center in Newton combined with Mercy, and right now what the Board of Health in Jasper County has to determine is they put out a letter of interest that was actually due yesterday, to see if there were any other agencies that wanted to hold that subcontract that the hospital had had in the past. The hospital itself had the option to take over the public health piece, even though Mercy said that they wouldn't, and the hospital just didn't feel like they could do that. So they're seeing if anyone's interested. If they're not interested, then the county's going to take back that public health piece, and the Board of Health then will directly govern the public health services within that county again. So, Paul, that might be something at supervisor meetings that maybe you might hear a little bit more about. On the other side, then, it also talks about in Poweshiek County, kind of the same conversations there between Grinnell Regional Medical Center and Mercy. They're still in the first baby steps of figuring out what they want their affiliation with Mercy to look like, but the same sort of structure, the Board of Health has contracted with the hospital in the past to provide those public health services, and as if they move forward with a Mercy affiliation, Board of Health, at this point, they don't know what it'll look like in terms of what public health services will look like within their county. So two major structural changes that we haven't seen in a long time. So I just wanted you to be aware of that as well in case you were at meetings and,
sure.
and you hear about boards of health taking back public health services. This is why.
Well, yeah, too. I serve on a board that meets monthly with a representative from both of those counties, so I'm sure I'll hear about it.
I'm sure you will. Any questions for me?
Don't believe so.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, Mid-Iowa Community Action.
I'm Sierra Stevens, and I'm the WIC coordinator from MICA, and I just wanted to share a little WIC update today. Just a quick overview of WIC for anybody not doesn't know about the program. We're a supplemental food and nutrition education program. So we provide nutrition education to families who, moms who are pregnant, may have just had a baby within the last 6 months or are breastfeeding, as well as infants and children up to the age of 5. We also provide any referrals to other resources that they need, such as other food resources, other than what WIC can provide, clothing, shelter, whatever the family needs. We try to help them find those resources as best as we can. We also provide vouchers for supplemental food, such as formula for infants who aren't breastfed. We also provide a lot of kitchen staples, such as milk, cereal, eggs, a grain option like bread or tortillas or rice, juice, and I think that's about it. Just some kitchen staples that families might need. In Story County, we serve both Ames and Nevada. Ames is our other permanent office, and then in Nevada, we're there once a month at the Methodist Church. I wanted to share our numbers for November. In Ames, we served approximately 1,431 participants, and in Nevada, we served about 59 participants, which was similar to the previous month. Some fun information I have to share today. Currently, the way we issue benefits to families is through paper checks that they redeem at the stores. But starting in March 1st at MICA, we are moving towards an EBT card. So currently, there's one agency in Iowa that's piloting the program right now. They're issuing participants an EBT card, much like food stamps. And all their WIC benefits are put on that card, and they use it just similar how they would an EBT card. They just swipe it at the register. They don't have to separate their food anymore. They don't have separate checks for each family member. It's just going to be a little bit easier for families to use. There will also be an app for smartphones that families can scan WIC foods. They can link their EBT card to their account and see what benefits they have remaining. They'll get a printout of the benefits at the clinic as well as a printout at the store if they don't have the smartphone option. So we're really excited about the change. We hope that will increase our participation, and a lot of families are really excited about it as well.
Hi, I'm Amy Roback, and I'm the Maternal and Child Health Coordinator for MICA. So I'll give you a brief little overview of each program. Maternal Health is a extra support program for pregnant moms. They come to their WIC appointment, and they meet with the RN, who gives them extra education with each trimester. She does depression screenings, domestic violence screenings, offers free prenatal vitamins. And then they also meet with a social worker who can help them sign up for Medicaid or get insurance. She gives them extra resources that they may need. And they also meet with a dental hygienist who does dental screening and can help them get a dentist if they don't have one. In Story County, we had 55 moms last year. So they go to each clinic in Ames. Most of the clinics have the maternal health program there. And then we have child health. in Ames or Story County, we had 2,213 kids participate, and so that goes from birth up to the age of 22. We did 697 developmental screenings and 674 lead screenings, 962 fluoride varnish treatments, and 1,842 dental screens. So when they come to their WIC appointment, they also see a dental hygienist and a nurse who does the screenings for them.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Next is Youth and Shelter Services, Denise Netton.
Good afternoon. You have two reports before you. One is our first quarterly report, which only goes through September. And, of course, I was here in October, but we were still gathering data at that point. And then the other one is just the most recent one that we're going to give to the Prevention Policy Board. I wanted to give you sort of an overview today of some of the reasons that we do what we do and how they interface. When we look at prevention, we look at sort of a matrix that looks at different, usually primary prevention kinds of strategies, or also known as universal strategies. And those include things like, and we've talked about these before, information and education and alternatives and social policy kinds of things and what we call community based process, where you're trying to get people in the room to have these kinds of discussions. This would be that strategy, bringing other, you know, people together from various parts of the community to discuss this. And we keep track of how many hours we spend in each of those. And obviously from this, we spend roughly about 50% of the time doing the information education kinds of things. So you have in front of you some of the things that we did with schools. And when you look at that chart, it doesn't look like we talked to anybody actually the first quarter, but it, very oftentimes we don't have much. We don't have any school programming in July and August, and we're just getting started in September. But and that includes a lot of the community presentations that we do. And I personally talked to 17 Iowa State classes in 2 weeks, so that the numbers go up that way. But they're not; those numbers aren't necessarily on those charts that you're looking at. So that's a lot of, you know, the kinds of things that we do, making sure that people are aware of what situations are and having an ongoing dialogue. So there's a difference between information and education. Information is usually a one-time thing. Education is when we go back 13 times for Project Alert or Too Good for Drugs or talking about touching or any of those kinds of programs. But then we also do alternatives. And this is where we talk more about some of the things that we do around not only substance abuse, but mental health issues and the youth development kinds of things that we do. So we work with a lot of different youth groups in Story County. We have a CHAMPS group in Ballard and a Game Changers, I'm sorry, in Ballard and CHAMPS in Collins-Maxwell. We also have a couple after-school groups in both those towns called Impact. We do another after-school group at the Ames Middle School. And then I work with the Mayor's Youth Committee, which is a group of high school students in Ames who just in October was at the middle school twice, working with every single one of the health kids the first time around on substance abuse issues and peer pressure. And so the kids can go in there and we do a program, you know, sort of an activity around substance abuse and how you choose your priorities. And, you know, if you have all these choices, what is substance abuse going to do to the kinds of things that are important to you? And then they have a chance to talk to the high school kids about, you know, have you been in these kinds of peer pressure groups and what do you do with the high school if you think somebody is approaching you about drugs and, you know, how do you get yourself out of that sort of situation. The Health Promotion Club at Iowa State has also been instrumental in helping with that, too. So we've had those groups work together. Just recently, we were back there the week before Thanksgiving, and they did more of a sort of mental health activity on bullying. That's been a focus of that group since its inception 18 years ago, where we've done something every year in the school around anti-bullying, recognizing that kids who are bullied are usually the kids who come back and feeling desperate and do something later that never ends well. So talking to the kids about how do you prevent that sort of thing in the first place. You prevent school violence by preventing bullying in the first place. That's one of the things that can help. So looking at that, and one of the things that we do with that is we do a survey with the kids before we start, asking them what kinds, have you been bullied? How often has that happened? What kinds of things are you seeing in the school? What do you do when you do that? Do you walk away? Do you tell a teacher? Do you tell an adult? And then we get that information back to the school. That is never public. But that is for the school to know what kinds of perceptions the kids are having about bullying in their school so that they can address that. But it's anonymous, but that is not a public thing that we do. It's just something for the school, for the counselors, for the teachers to be able to discuss and then act accordingly. And I think that that really has been useful over the years because one of the things that I ask the kids is, you know, how do you feel safe? Well, we didn't used to have as many teachers in the hallway between classes, and now they've upped that. So I think that has been in response to some of the feedback that we've been able to bring them through that survey. So we're pleased about that. But we also involve the kids in some of the social policy kinds of things, and that's another one of the strategies. So, you know, part of an alternative group, like an after-school group, an alternative shouldn't just be about, you know, doing something for kids. It really is supposed to be about skills building. So one of the ways that we do that is we involve them in social policy. And recently we took some of those groups together and we did a leadership forum about how to talk to your legislators, because later on in the season they're going to be going to the Day on the Hill activity that we've done for years down there, and they go and talk to their legislators. And we wanted to start earlier this year talking to them about how do you present yourself as a leader and how do you do that and how, you know, get confidence for that. You don't just want to take them down to the state house and say, hey, you know, knock yourself out. That's not fair. So working with them around those leadership skills and what are those, because that's sort of nebulous, and addressing that and saying, yeah, be a good leader, but how do you do that? Actually, you know, talking about those different skills and those different qualities. So we worked with a number of schools together on a day that they didn't have school and brought them together in Ballard. But they also do, besides that, the Mayor's Youth Committee and the Health Promotion Club have been very instrumental in working on the vaping ordinance. And so, you know, it doesn't do any good to do something but not teach the next generation what to do, oh, just in case I'm not around someday. And that really also speaks to some of the other things that we look at in terms of risk and protective factors. And one of the risk factors that impacts all of the boxes, school violence, depression and suicide, teen pregnancy, school dropout, substance abuse, and teen pregnancy, is unclear rules and regulations concerning substance abuse. Another one that makes an impact is extreme economic deprivation. Now, I probably can't do anything about extreme economic deprivation, but one of the things that we do is we have a job coach that works with kids about how they can have better job skills and how they can get jobs. So that's not just an alternative. That is an alternative in terms of skills building, but also in terms of when we work with the kids around policy kinds of things, they can bring to bear their thoughts about that. What kinds of rules and regulations make sense to them? Because unclear and inconsistent kinds of policies send a mixed message, and oftentimes that's worse than no message at all for young people. So, bring that back around to vaping, which I seem to always do. Someday I hope not to be talking about it. Is next week the Mayor's Youth Committee and the Health Promotion Club will be going to City Council, who has finally got it, I shouldn't say finally, but they are now going to put it on the agenda. And we'll see if their hard work has come to fruition, because both the Mayor's Youth Committee and the Health Promotion Club did surveys that brought that information to bear. And it has now, I think, passed or jumped through all the hoops it needs to at the university, and it's on track to be a policy for the university as of July 1st, I think. Every time I think it's the last hoop, it isn't quite the last hoop, but I'm assured that that's going to be the case. So now the kids will go back to the City Council next week, along with Prevention Policy Board and Healthiest Aims, to see what the City Council has to say about that. So that's full circle. That's all of the strategies. What questions do you have?
I don't have any. Anybody else?
No.
You're always so thorough. You just suck all the questions right out of us. So.
Long-winded. So.
Okay.
Oh, one more thing. In terms of Health Promotion Club, Margaret was very generous with her time and expertise a couple weeks ago and came to the Health Promotion Club to talk about environmental health. And I don't know that everybody's going to want that job, but they have a great deal more respect for what the job is now. So, and I think we're going to be asking other people in the room to come to some of the future meetings. I'm just warning them.
Well, your efforts for e-cigarettes must be, you know, getting into some kids, because as I talk about it in the high school in my office, they are saying, yep, I've heard that before. Yep, I've heard that before. Always a good sign.
Next, Story County Public Health, Kyle Breeze.
Good afternoon. I think I'll let Terry go through the disease report, and then we'll just do a little quick operational review.
Okay.
Yeah. We've been pretty lucky. We have escaped flu at this time right now. Knock on wood. And mumps, we've had one case, but no sustained transmission of any kind at this point, so that is good. Otherwise, no particular outbreaks. We've been doing a lot of immunizing and immunization audits. So our October, November, and, well, December and January, that's a lot of what we do is audit immunization cards in the schools, all the schools in the county, all the daycares, daycare in the county. So really that is about it, and we are preparing, as far as the emergency preparedness, we are preparing for an exercise that'll take place in March, April, and May. So that is the most on the emergency preparedness front at this point.
Okay, and then just operationally, I think you got the kind of the services update in front of you. Medicaid modernization, I just want to point out, and this is where we get different factions involved. Mary Greeley is part of a lawsuit against the state to block the current Medicaid modernization, at least the transfer on January 1st. So there's, I believe, 10 other independent hospitals in conjunction with the Hospital Association that's part of that suit. So just want to make sure that you're all aware of that, that Mary Greeley itself is part of that lawsuit. At the next meeting, you'll get a full report out of the community health needs assessment as we wrap that up and look to present that to the community in January, and we'll bring the report here in February. Touching back on the just on our operational services, we are taking a as best as we do a marketing approach to some of our homemaker services, some of our home care aid services, and looking to get back into the physicians' offices and make them aware of these services that are provided through public health. I think there's definitely a sense that if physicians were aware of these services being provided, that they would be more utilized than they have been. So we are looking to get the word out a little bit better and also build back up some relationships with the physician clinics through that process. Lastly, we are also exploring at this time a Department of Public Health new grant that's out there. It's referred to as the SIM grant, the State Innovation Model. I thought Heather might talk about it, but she didn't. I won't go into the depths of why it exists or why the money is there. Part of it has to do with Medicaid modernization. But the Department of Public Health is putting a large amount of money out there, $2+ million that initially they intend to divide 10 ways in the state with a pie-in-the-sky goal of changing healthcare, transforming healthcare delivery. And they want it, what it needs to look like is to have a lot of people at the table there helping make some of these decisions. Story County is well positioned because we have a lot of people at the table in various pieces. So we are through our Squala group, through our Squala leadership group, which includes YSS and MICA, United Way of Story County and others, seeing if we can put a worthwhile application together. It is due here in December. It's a quick turnaround time, but I just want to let you know that we are pursuing that. And again, as Geared Claybaugh noted, what they're really looking for, big picture, is some ideas for the state to, within the state, for groups to come back and present models. And so we think Story County is doing a lot of good things that a lot of other counties in the state are not doing. And so we think we have some pieces to build on. So that's why we're looking to pursue that. Otherwise, that's the update.
Okay. Very good. Thank you both.
One question. In your monitoring so far, are we in good compliance in immunizations? Or do we have pockets of non-compliance for whatever reason?
Overall, we have good compliance. It's in the high 90s. There are, as far as, are you talking students?
No, I'm mainly talking about children.
Well, we do, I just talked about our immunization.
Yeah, immunizations. Yeah.
And so, as far as babies go, if they're not in a daycare, You know, we don't audit their records, but I mean, as far as vaccination percentages, we do quite well. McFarland Clinic does an amazing job.
What she's saying is that if they're not in daycares, there's no way for them to track.
There's no way we track them until they get to school.
Right, exactly. But in schools, we're well over 90%. And in the state of Iowa, there you can have two exemptions. You can have a medical exemption or a religious exemption. And there is not a, what's that other terminology,
philosophical?
Yeah, philosophical exemption.
We don't have that.
We do not have that. And there's a lot of talk about, it's very interesting, the state of Mississippi, which only has a medical exemption, has a 99% rate of immunization within their schools. They have one of the highest in the country. So there's been some talk about whether or not we need to do something with that. And the problem with the religious exemption is it's hard to track it down. You know, they can basically say anything.
Yeah, what falls under religion?
Well, there are some Christian.
Does it have to be an organized religion?
Well, that's a very good question. There's a lot of Christian sects that say that they should not be immunized, and I won't even get into that at all. It's tough for the public health department to track all those down. But we still have a very, very high rate of immunizations, even with those groups of people who don't vaccinate. So.
Up to date is in the high 90s, and the late and up to date, it brings it even closer to 100%. But we're not at
100%. It's nice to take Mississippi's first something.
Yeah, I know, and not a sexually transmitted diseases. Yeah, but it's a really interesting thought. Just taking away that thing that it increases it to 99%.
Margaret, you kind of jumped the gun. I didn't get to announce you, but that's okay. Last but not least, Margaret Janes, Environmental Health.
Start with numbers, as always. Septics, about the same as last year. We've done about 81 new ones this calendar year. For wells, 27 new wells, 8 of which were water, 23 pluggings, 2 rehabs, 142 water samples. Kathy and Matt have been really busy with that, and 49 time of transfer inspections. Grants to counties, we have a balance of $16,000 that'll easily hold us till the end of this fiscal year. We've only done 2 arsenic tests on new wells with no traces found. Enforcement, 1 overdue time of transfer binding agreement, and I think it's just a timing thing that'll get done eventually. 8 outstanding notice of violations ranging from trailer parks to septics to plugging wells. And we received 3 new complaints in the last 2 months. 1 was odor from around the DuPont plant. And then ISU Dairy, the manure land application practices, because they're an educational institution, they are not bound to a manure management plan, but they turn one in, but they don't really have to follow it. And so there's an ag engineer that moved in close to that, and he's having problems with their techniques, the umbilical cord thing and leaving puddles of manure, things like that. So we're going to help be, an extra set of eyes for DNR and just kind of help them with that. And the lead house over on Lincoln Way, I guess it's sold again. The previous contract.
Oh, the one here in Nevada?
Mm-hmm. The previous contract person called me yesterday and said that they're selling it. You got to get out there. So we're working on it. All right, so Paul knows all about this. But anyway, so we get a notification in the mail that there's a leaking underground tank right in Nevada there, and it actually used to be the old Dairy Queen that recently went out of business. And before that, it was a Kermagee gas station. And so the leaking tank is sort of over there by the greenhouse-looking area. The tank is there, and then the pumping island was actually in the front over by the sign. And unfortunately, the house that you see right behind it to the left there has been a private daycare facility for many, many, many years. And So, and then the plume, I only put one example up there of, let's see, I think that was the benzene one. It doesn't matter. But most of the plumes, the soil plumes and the groundwater plumes, show that it is impacting the land that has the daycare. So I contacted the lady and asked her, you know, if she was going to be notifying current clients and clients in the past, and she felt that it wasn't necessary.
What are the tanks leaking? Explain that to me. Gasoline?
It's an old gas tank that was left in the ground, and they're not as good as they used to be, so they corrode and leak.
So they're still full of gas when they leave? Like when the...
I guess. Or at least some that the pump wasn't getting to.
I think that they pump it all out.
Yeah, but they're picking it up. Well, see, the other thing, too, is that it's not just from... It didn't start the day after they left. It's been leaking as they were using it. And then it's just sitting in the soil, you know. So those circles show the plume of where the soil is impacted. So let's see. So benzene, ethyl benzene were the two that were high. Toluene were within limits, still present, but within limits. No diesel. Well, some diesel, but again, below the limits. You know, so we talked to legal about this, what is our role in letting people know. And I guess, you know, it's the city's been notified, the county's been notified, the owner of the daycare's been notified, and then we posted it on our website, you know, all this information. I don't know what else we can do. Kerr-McGee, they went out of business or bankrupt, but they did leave some money in a trust fund to pay for problems that came up like this. It's unusual because almost all of these leaking tanks have been identified by now, so it's really odd that this one has just now been found out, really.
So how would you fix this problem? Do you have to, like, how would you fix it?
Well, lots of times they'll air strip it. They'll you know, pump the air and the groundwater back, and so just aerate it out. Sometimes if the soil is really bad, they'll actually remove it and then basically windrow it, and then the air, you know, just evaporate the fumes off. So right now I think they're in the process of installing monitoring wells. And then DNR and EPA does this Rebecca study, so it's risk-based. So, you know, they have to take it to a point so that it's considered not a risk anymore. So whoever decides that, whoever's God for that day, decides when it's good enough and clean enough.
We're sure the tank is still there, because I thought the tanks had been removed. I think once that's in the soil.
Yeah, it's in the soil. Yeah, and then.
See, that hasn't been a gas station for probably 25
okay,
years.
Okay, so that makes sense. That makes sense to me. So
yeah, because it's just been leaking
gone,
all
there's
along.
Not this big gas tank still in the ground that's leaking.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know how that works. I think, you know, once it's no longer a gas station, I think there's only a certain amount of time until the tank has to be removed. Well, see, that's just
that's a good point.
They found a gas tank up there at City Hall.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And they tried to sell this here a few years ago at auction, a couple years ago, and they couldn't even get a single bid on it. So it is. So the tank is still in there.
So the tank is still there.
It looks like it, according to the engineer's report. Isn't that crazy, though? And then a daycare right next to it, and then it's impacting the soil. And the you know, the engineer is saying, well, you know, it's a good 10 feet down. The groundwater is a good 10 feet down. I haven't seen the groundwater 10 feet down in a really long time, and I would know. I do a lot of probing. So, you know,
right.
I don't know. But I'm just reporting it, and...
I think
it's a very unfortunate location.
You know, I think we've done what we can do. I mean, it's. I think at this point, it's out of our hands.
Yeah.
Well, do we report it to the state?
Yes, oh, the state is fully involved. Yeah, they're the regulatory authority on the Lust tanks. Just the FYI. So, and then Hickory Grove watershed update. So far we've put in 7 systems and 2 scheduled for the spring of 2016, and that will complete our planned ones, all 9 of them. And a letter was sent out to the last holdout, and hopefully, I haven't heard back from them yet, but hopefully they will. And the price range of the new septic systems has been from $7,000 to $12,000, $12,000 being a pressurized system, so it was a lot higher. Trainings and meetings, we all went to the safety training. We all we had an EcoFlow guy come in. They're switching from peat to cocoa coconut shreddings or whatever. It's kind of a byproduct, and it works a lot better, and it's probably cheaper. So switching that over, so they kind of talked to us about sizing the systems and things like that. I attended the DuPont grand opening. Kathy and I went to the NEHA regional conference. Let's see, what else? Kathy did the grants to counties webinar. She handles that grant. Matt did ESRI training. And then I also, as Denise mentioned, had the opportunity to talk to the ISU Health Promotion Club. A lot of fun kids. Thank you for that opportunity. Miscellany, I'll talk about that picture last. We share an office coordinator with planning, and we interviewed 7 individuals and came up with the perfect one. She'll be starting on December 14th. We're looking forward to having her. Center Grove Orchard update, they plan on installing their mechanical system for the whole thing. They had a conditional use permit because they added a train and a lot of things to that orchard down there. So it gave us an opportunity to review their wastewater. And so they've been at this forever, but the plan is that they are going to install the new septic system, and it's under DNR authority because it's huge, spring of 2016. And they'll have to take all the wastewater to Huxley, even though it's very expensive, if they do not do that. That's where we stand on that. Cornerstone, they added an office, so I'm in the process of reviewing their system. They have not been testing their discharge into the creek, so I'm doing follow-up on that. Postal Service has been losing more and more water samples of ours, very frustrating for Matt and Kathy. Take all the trouble to do a water sample, and then the mailman loses it. One of Kathy's went up. What? They're the owner of the tank, too. And Kathy's one of hers was on that fire, the truck fire, so that's kind of cool, I think. Crestview update, we've had 2 little things come up with that. They moved their burn pile. The Kelly Fire Department called me on one Sunday, but I was out of town with a complaint on that, so we're going to have to keep watching them now on 2 fire, illegal fires. And then the owner himself is doing work on the public well, and I think they're not supposed to. So we let DNR know that we had a sort of an insider tell us about that. Yeah. And then my final miscellany here is discharge to a creek. So this guy owns a house, and he's splitting his property into. He's going to sell the house, and he's going to build a house. Okay. So it's and there's a creek that goes this way and this way. So he's selling this one, building here. And so I'm doing the soils work, and I said, well, why do you want to replace the existing system? Do you know it's going to fail? And he said, oh, you know, I just want it perfectly right for the new people coming in. I said, well, you know, you may as well get it inspected. And I said, let me just go over and take a look for you. And so what they had done is they built their house over top of their old 1970s system, and they put in a septic tank, and that you're looking down in the inlet, and it was just chock full, so it's never been pumped in 20 years, and then 20 feet direct line to the creek. Direct line. So with the tank so full, things aren't even sitting there for 10 minutes. It's just shooting through to the creek. You think we're in Kentucky, you know? I mean,
wow.
I just strike that Kentucky comment from the record.
It is so frustrating. You do this, you know, and these people have money, and they have sense. You know, they're perfectly intelligent people. And, you know, I said, Matt, what, you know, why do people do this? He said, well, they just don't care. And maybe that's the answer. So, you know. I just had to get that up. So this tank is the one that had two water samples, not this tank, but this property owner had two water samples lost on it. So Matt asked me to hold off on calling them and telling them the good news before he could get the so he could get the water sample before I tell them they've got to replace their system yesterday.
So that's looking down into the septic tank.
Yes, and it's not a good picture. I realize it's hard to do to get a good picture of that. But blah, it was just blah. That's right.
Thanks.
That's right.
Thanks, Matt.
And thank you.
Any questions for Margaret? So we believe that the owner at Crestview is doing a little work on the public water system.
Well, BNR wants them to, but it's unclear when it's a public well, if it has to be a certified contractor. I believe it does, but that's a BNR issue.
And so how's
airline in?
Is there any improvement?
Yeah, it's a little better. It's a little better. Yep.
Okay. All right. Anything else for Margaret? Okay. Any staff or board comments? I think we actually probably should have had our election this month.
Oh, you're right.
But we probably all know how that's going to turn out. So, you never know. Oh, we'll do it in February.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay, short of that, I would take a motion for adjournment.
I so move.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
When's our next meeting?
First Tuesday in February.
Mm-hmm. Which is?
I'm not sure. Yeah. Matt, you got a calendar?
You're doing good, Matt.
Here's the box and a little piece of styrofoam.
Plug one down.
Sure.
I was on a board for a large benevolent church affiliate organization in another state. And we had a leaking oil tank next to a facility that held a number of adult children, mentally retarded, that was leaking. We pulled a tank, and they made us take all the soil out for a large area, and then we couldn't get rid of the soil. One way to get rid of it, we had to have an asphalt company buy it and combine it in there. Asphalt.
Oh,
put it in our road.
It in.
And then, let's see. And then.
Took 2 years to get rid of the dirt.
Okay. I can't believe they haven't done anything with this one yet.
How does he feel about his driveway coming out on that?
Every time
I took the stick down for 3 days.
Didn't you buy the first one?
I didn't realize. Yeah,
I think maybe she did.
Yeah. All right.